And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, we have our NBA Finals matchup. What could this series mean for someone like Steph Curry? Plus, why analytics will only get you so far. Mark Kingston coming back as head coach of the Gamecocks. I'll explain why. Plus, we have to get to one of my favorite stories in sports of late. This Jock Peterson, Tommy Pham fantasy football debate. Who was right? Who was wrong? And as we have passed Memorial Day, hopefully had a great day yesterday celebrating. Remember why we get the day off. But this is that first checkpoint of the baseball season, when you start to actually check in on the standings, see who's doing what this time of year. We'll look at the start to the season. Can the Atlanta Braves turn this around? Who are the most interesting teams in baseball right now? And a whole lot more throughout the afternoon. David Tepper made an interesting decision this morning. The latest on Deshaun Watson. And can we do better than milk as a celebration, and hot dogs as an important part of our summer? That's all that throughout the afternoon. You can join the conversation throughout. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email at studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there. Or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing all right. Sunday was definitely a tough day. There's no doubt about it. By the way, Max Strus was inbounds. Thank you very much. The heel did not touch. But I'm doing good, Luke. Had a great weekend celebrating Memorial Day. Glad to have you back in studio. It's nice to see you, and hopefully we'll have a good week so far. So glad to be here.
Yeah, likewise. It's good to be back. I always say this, right? There's pros and cons to everything you do. And when you do the show remotely on the road, the majority of the time, I'm just doing it from a hotel room. Sometimes I do it from the arena or the stadium or wherever I may be. A lot of times, just from the hotel room. And it is kind of nice. You know, there's no commute. The commute is from the bed to the little desk they give you. You turn on the equipment. You get hooked up. You got the TV right there. I could do it, in my boxers if I wanted to. It's kind of nice. But I always like being here in person. It's the first time I'm in studio in a week, and it feels good to be back. I always compare it to back in the day when I was in high school, even college. You had that, like, hippie teacher in college, and the students would know it, and they'd always say, let's do class outside, and it seems fun. Oh, it's a beautiful day. You want to get outside. Let's have class outside. Then you get out there, and you're sitting cross-legged, and your papers are blowing everywhere, and after a while, like, it gets old fast. I never liked class outside, and it always annoyed me when you had those students in your class that would start up, right? It's that conversation. It's a beautiful day. Hey, teacher, can we go outside, have class outside? And I think, oh, this is brutal. I'm uncomfortable. I'm sitting on the ground. You stain your pants, your papers are flying, you can't take notes. Ridiculous. After a while, it's like, let's go back inside. I want to sit at a desk. Same idea here. Right, it's fun to do the show on the road, but after a little while, let's get back in studio and make sure we're good to go. Fewer technical issues, I guess, when you're in studio. Let me start with this. We have our NBA Finals matchup set. We always talk about the NBA being a stars league, right? You just need a star to win a championship. And while that's true, it's not the whole truth. Jimmy Butler was the best player in that series, and the Heat still lost. Why? Because he had no supporting cast. Right? Bam played well in Game 7, but still averaged fewer points in the playoffs than the regular season. P.J. Tucker did not score in Game 7. Kyle Lowry was lousy, was hurt, wasn't the same player throughout the series, looked a lot older all of a sudden. Sometimes you just age quickly. Lowry looked like he did. Max Strus went two games. He's one of their starters. He went back-to-back games without scoring a point. Victor Oladipo's not the same player since his injury. He was lousy in Game 7. Tyler Hero was banged up, only played 7 minutes, didn't score in Game 7. Meanwhile, the Celtics had three players score over 23 points. They're a more balanced attack. You need stars, but you also need pieces around them as well. Giannis needed Jrue Holiday to finally get over the hump and win a championship. LeBron needed a healthy Anthony Davis the year prior in L.A. The Raptors brought in Kawhi Leonard to be the star, knowing they already had the supporting cast to fit around him. It's no longer Dwight Howard leading the Magic to the NBA Finals, or even LeBron leading those Cavs teams, or Dirk with the Mavs carrying them, or Iverson 20 years ago, all by himself getting the Sixers to the NBA Finals. You can get close, but you can't win without enough pieces around you. Look at Kevin Durant last year, right? Kyrie goes down, James Harden goes down, they lose to the Bucks. He did all he could in Game 7. Still wasn't enough. You need stars, but you don't only need stars. Gone are the days of let's just get this one guy and we'll be good to go. Let's just bring in LeBron James. We're going to win a bunch of championships. It's no longer the case. And the two teams in the finals, the Celtics and the Warriors, are both deep, well-balanced teams. You need to have good enough pieces around your stars. And Miami's pieces just weren't good enough. Jimmy Butler was the best player in the series. I would have no problem giving him the MVP even on a losing team. I think he was that good. He was that valuable. What he did in Game 6 allowed that series to go to Game 7, right? He kept the Heat alive as long as he could. And here's the other thing. To make a championship run, it usually requires some luck or some breaks going your way. Maybe luck is too strong of a word, because whenever we say luck, it feels like we're taking away from whoever pulled something off. He just got lucky, right? And it makes it seem like the only reason why they were successful was because of luck. So let's call it breaks. Sometimes you need some breaks to go your way. Maybe we're splitting hairs, but it sounds better. The 49ers had the Rams beat this past year. And then Tart dropped an easy interception. And a few weeks later, the Rams are celebrating a Super Bowl. The Patriots dynasty started with the Tuck Rule, which at the time, nobody even knew what that was when it first happened. Eli Manning won his first Super Bowl on David Tyree's most incredible catch. Now, Jimmy Butler was the best player in the series, but he was injured for essentially three games. I mean, he's probably injured for more, but he could at least play close to 100% the last couple of games of the series. But for about 2.5 games there in the middle of the series, he wasn't much help. And he got little help from those around him. And yet Miami was still one shot away in Game 7 from winning the series. This series had no business coming down to the final minute of Game 7. And sometimes you need some luck along the way. If Jimmy Butler was healthy all 7 games, I think we're talking about a Heat-Warriors NBA Finals right now. He wasn't healthy for at least 2.5 of the games, and they still almost won. And you saw the difference, right? In Game 6 and 7 compared to prior to that for Jimmy Butler, he looked like a different player. He was the best player on the floor the last two games. The Bucks won it all last year. And along the way, you had Kyrie and James Harden get hurt in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then Durant, if he was just an inch further back, the Bucks don't go to the NBA Finals. Caught a few breaks. The Lakers, when they won the Finals 2 years ago, they had a 4-month break. They had a pandemic we have not endured in a century. And it gave them a 4-month break before the playoffs, allowing 36-year-old LeBron James and Anthony Davis, who can never stay healthy, to suddenly get healthy for the playoffs. And they went on to win a championship. Call it a break, if you will, right, while everything else was crumbling around. But the pandemic helped the Lakers really win that championship. The year prior, Kawhi Leonard had that shot from the corner that bounced on the rim 4 times before going in. And if you want to say, well, he's just a talented shooter. Okay, well, they also dealt with the Warriors team in the finals that had all sorts of injuries. They were a shell of themselves. Go back a few years when LeBron came back from down 3-1 against the Warriors. Draymond was suspended in Game 5. The Warriors are trying to close out the series. It was 3-1. Draymond doesn't play in Game 5. The whole series changes. And don't forget, Andrew Bogut got injured. And people don't pay attention to that because, who cares? He's Bogut playing with Durant and Draymond and Clay and stuff. But Bogut was so important as a lane protector in that series when he went injured, or when he went down with an injury, the whole series changed. So this year, you look at the two teams. The Warriors face the Nuggets, missing two of their top three players. Then they face the inexperienced Grizzlies, who weren't your typical two seed, while also missing Ja Morant for 3 games. And then they faced the 4-seed Dallas Mavericks in the conference finals, who were also a little ahead of schedule. And by the way, a 4-seed hasn't won the Western Conference Finals in 16 years. And the Mavs certainly did not come close this year. And on the flip side, the Celtics faced the Nets and all their nonsense. And then the Bucks without Chris Middleton still went 7 games. And then the Heat, who were all banged up, still went 7 games. Now, I think these are the two best teams from the playoffs this year. I do think we get the best championship matchup, all things considered. The Celtics have the best record in the NBA over the last 4 months, and the Warriors are the best team in the NBA over the last 8 years. But sometimes a little luck or a break or two going your way is also required as well. LeBron won his first title in Miami when Derrick Rose got hurt for the number one seed Bulls. And then Love and Kyrie got hurt in 2015 when the Cavs lost in the finals. And Magic was injured in the conference finals in 89, and then the Lakers went on to lose in the championship to the Pistons. And Elgin Baylor got injured in 65, and they lost in the championship, and so on and so forth. Sometimes, as they say, right, it's better to be lucky than to be good. Well, to be a champion, you usually have to have both. You have to be good, and you have to have a little luck along the way as well. Catch a few breaks to make it all the way to a championship. Now let me shift to this. Speaking of a champion, if Golden State wins this series, it'll be ring number 4 for Steph Curry. And I think there is a really interesting debate you could have about these two careers, Steph Curry and LeBron James. LeBron is a better basketball player. I think he's more talented. But I also think Tom Brady is not the most talented quarterback. He's the best. But I'd rather have Joe Montana's ability or John Elway or probably Dan Marino, or you'd rather have Brett Favre's arm and Peyton Manning's mind. And Aaron Rodgers may be an all-around more skillful quarterback than Tom Brady, but Brady is still the greatest of all time because he's the best winner. This would be a big ring for Steph Curry, right? It'd be number 4. LeBron has 4, but one of those was in the bubble where, again, right, it's unlike any other championship. He had a 4-month window. It allowed LeBron and Anthony Davis to get healthy. And I remember talking about this at the time. Sports talk was interesting back then, 2 years ago in the middle of the pandemic. And we were looking at these championships, and my whole point was, if it looks to be an outlier years from now, then maybe it's because of the elements. Right? Like the Dodgers won the World Series. Now, to this point, it is the only World Series they have. But if you come back and you win a World Series 2 years later, or maybe the very next year, or you continue to be a great team, then you can't really point to the bubble as being the reason why. When it comes to the Lakers, in LeBron's time in L.A., what else have they accomplished outside of the bubble? The bubble is the great outlier. So if we take away, right, give a half championship to LeBron and the Lakers, that championship is like no other we have ever had in the NBA. It's not the same as a normal championship. It's not the same as what Golden State and Boston are going through right now. So if LeBron has, say, 3.5 rings and Steph Curry gets to 4, right, he would at minimum tie LeBron, if not pass him, if you agree with my bubble theory. And if you want to tell me, well, Steph Curry, he won a couple of his with Kevin Durant. Okay, well, what did LeBron do in Miami? So then take away those two, and now you still have either 2-2 or 2-1.5 if we include the bubble. Steph Curry would be at number 2 if he wins this championship. But here are the differences, and there's a few, right? Steph Curry didn't have to leave. Sure, Kevin Durant came to him, but he had already won at that point. It wasn't his first championship. He was already a champion. And Durant was the one seen as being the softy for having to go to Golden State, the team he couldn't beat, to go get his first championship. That's a big difference. If LeBron won in Cleveland first and then teamed up in Miami and said, all right, I got my championship, now let me, you know, kind of take it easy a little bit. All right, I don't think we'd have as big of an issue. But Magic, Bird, Jordan, Duncan, Kobe, Bill Russell, they all won at least 4 championships in their career, and they all did it with one team, the team that originally drafted them. Steph Curry with another ring would add his name to that list as well. And the all-time greats, they all did it with one team. They didn't bounce around. LeBron had to go team up elsewhere to finally get it done. I think additionally, Steph Curry has impacted the game far more than really anybody else, which is kind of wild to think. Jordan impacted the fans of the game. Everybody wanted to be like Michael Jordan. As a kid of the 90s, right, I knew it well. Our neighbor named their kid Jordan. Everybody, right? Everybody loved Michael Jordan. Everyone had their jersey, and everybody started wearing the wristband right below the elbow like Jordan, and everybody would play with their tongue hanging out, and everybody would try to jump from the foul line. He impacted fans of the game and who or what you wanted to be, but not necessarily the game itself. all of a sudden you weren't tuning into basketball games and seeing guys jump from the foul line and hang in the air because they couldn't do. They wanted to do what Jordan could do, but they couldn't do it. You couldn't replicate it. That's why Jordan is so special. He impacted fans of the game, not necessarily the game. I don't know if LeBron has impacted the game of basketball either. But Steph Curry certainly has. He has changed the way the sport is played. He's the best shooter we ever had. And now you go to your local gym and watch your kid go play basketball in the sixth grade, and guys are chucking it up from beyond the arc. Everybody wants to shoot threes now. And that's the way the sport has moved. LeBron, for as great as he is, doesn't have something that defines him like that. Maybe because he's just an all-around good player. Maybe you think of his athleticism at his size, or maybe his defense. But Jordan had, like, the hang time. He had the dunking. Kobe had, you could say, maybe the killer instinct. Curry has the three-point shot. All right, what about LeBron? And again, I think LeBron James is the better all-around player. But we focus so much on winning. Charles Barkley is forgotten. Malone, Stockton, because they never won. Brady is the GOAT, greatest of all time. Not because of his arm talent, but because he wins. And he's been doing it for so long and still at a high level at his age. It's not because you watch him and think like, wow, this is the most impressive quarterback I've ever seen. No, we're impressed by his ability to always win. In the NBA, only 40 players have ever won at least four championships. And a lot of them, like Robert Horry, are role players, right? Derek Fisher. They didn't have a huge role. They weren't the stars. So when you talk about stars winning at least four championships, you're down to about 20 to 25 maybe over the years. But then you factor in Steph Curry's impact, the fact that he did it all with one team, the team that drafted him. You could say, hey, he did it with KD, but he won 73 games in a championship before Durant. And I think most stars wouldn't work well with another star. I think Curry deserves credit for that more than discredit, because he was capable of doing something most others couldn't. Stars usually have too much of an ego to get along with a second star, to share that basketball. They want to do it their way. Steph Curry had no problem kind of stepping aside a little bit for the betterment of the team. And let's not forget, he also went 3-1 against LeBron in finals. He lost one total game in the last two series against LeBron. He went 8-1. And that's the other part of the conversation. LeBron is 4-6 in the finals in his career. Curry would be 4-2. As many rings as LeBron in far less attempts, about half as many appearances. LeBron's 4-6 in the finals. Magic Johnson was 5-4. Kobe was 5-2. Shaq 4-2. Larry Bird 3-2. Curry would be 4-2. Be a pretty good record. Wouldn't be the Jordan 6-0, but it'd be one of the next closest things. Kobe, you know, has the next best winning percentage amongst the more recent. So I'm not talking about Bill Russell going 11-0, all right, playing against whatever J.J. Redick said, Fireman, back in the day. Right when there were 10 teams in the league back in the 60s. That's not quite the same. But Curry would have the same number of rings in fewer tries. And let's not forget, he's still 6 years younger. So he could continue to add on. He could have even more opportunities. And sure, he wasn't, you know, the finals MVP in any of those championships. That's the big difference between him and LeBron. But we get so caught up in these awards. Phil Jackson is one of the all-time greatest coaches in basketball history. How many times was he named Coach of the Year? Once in his career. He's won 11 NBA Finals. He has one Coach of the Year award. Does that mean that Phil Jackson is not as impressive as somebody else who won more Coaches of the Year awards? Does that mean he wasn't some sort of great coach? Don't focus so much on the individual awards. They're given out by media members voting on the thing. Phil Jackson, yeah, he coached some of the greatest players, sure. But Michael Jordan won 6 championships in his 7 years with Phil Jackson as his head coach. He made it to the NBA Finals 0 times in the other 7 years. Kobe Bryant won 5 championships in 11 years with Phil Jackson as his head coach. He won 0 games after the second round of a playoff in his other 9 years without Phil Jackson. Never won a game beyond the second round without Phil. Phil Jackson had great talent to coach, absolutely, but they also needed him to. Steph Curry has played on good teams, no doubt, but they certainly needed him to. I'm not telling you Curry is better than LeBron, but is he better at winning? If he wins this one, I think so. I don't think Marcus Smart is better than Kyrie Irving. But do I think the Celtics are better off right now with Marcus Smart in the finals than Kyrie Irving? Yeah, I think so. This fourth ring would be the most impressive one yet for Curry because of the team he's doing it with. It'd be like LeBron's Cleveland championship. And it would also be huge for Curry's legacy to get to that number 4 when I would say LeBron's kind of at 3.5. And by the way, LeBron right has 3.5 and 10 NBA Finals appearances. Curry would be at 4 in 6 appearances. Here was Patrick Beverly, who, of course, is still in the league. He's been working on ESPN's Get Up and some of the other shows. And here's what he had to say about if Curry, with a championship ring, would be right there with LeBron James. Here was Beverly's thoughts.
Man, they right there.
They're right there together.
He's changed the game. LeBron's changed the game. Of course, everyone knows that. He's changed the game for a 6'8", 6'9", guy to be able to do the stuff what he does with the ball you've never seen before. But what Steph Curry has done, like Allen mentioned on it, these guys are shooting threes and not looking anymore. I mean, that is that. He has changed the game. He is
Most popular player in the NBA.
He looks good doing it. The face is perfect. I mean, everything. I mean, he's the golden boy. Everyone knows that. It just works for him.
Patrick Beverly talking about the two. I don't know if LeBron has changed the game because you can't just be like that. You're either 6'9 and freakishly athletic or you're not. For Steph Curry, the great thing why so many people love him is because he's relatable. Because that you can actually do. You could be 5'10 but turn yourself into a great shooter and feel like you too could play in the NBA. LeBron, if you're not 6'9, how can you try to be like LeBron James? If you're not one of the biggest, incredible, like freakish athletes we've ever had, how can you be like LeBron? Sure, it leads to somebody like a Giannis or maybe a Durant, right? These guys, although Durant was first. Durant was right after. But you get the idea, right? Playing out in the perimeter at their size. But I don't think that was so much LeBron. And if you want to say that, we could point back to Magic Johnson at the same size playing point guard years before LeBron. I don't know if LeBron's changed the game. He's changed what you see from a basketball player. But you can't duplicate it unless you're built like LeBron James, and very few people in the world are. The great thing about Steph Curry is he's not some sort of freakish athlete. He could just shoot it really well. He works so hard on his three-point shooting that everyone else is trying to do the same. The Warriors and the Celtics begin the NBA Finals Thursday night. Should be an interesting series. Here was Jalen Rose giving his prediction on how he thinks this series will play out.
I believe watching the Boston Celtics lose Game 6 on their home floor, that would have shown me that they were championship-ready against a veteran-laden Golden State Warrior team. However, I was I was truly pleased that they were able to win the East the way they did, even though the Heat came back. But it also showed me that they ain't ready to beat the Warriors just yet. I think the Golden State Warriors, who've been resting and watching this series, who have that championship level of pedigree. And Steph Curry, let me tell y'all something. He knows that he needs to win a final MVP. He know we having these conversations about him elevating. So I believe the Golden State Warriors get it done in 6.
Jalen Rose predicting the Warriors to win in 6 as the series begins Thursday night. It'd be a big championship for Steph Curry and his legacy. You can always get in touch with the show online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. Leave a message there. Chloe says, people thought that the Warriors needed Durant, but it's now pretty clear that Durant needed the Warriors. Do you think Durant will win another championship? I think he's too talented of a player to just assume for the rest of his career he's not going to win a championship. I mean, I thought him and the Nets, I didn't pick them, but I thought they would have the potential this year to potentially win the East, and they didn't even win a single game. That was embarrassing. But I think Durant is still too talented of a player that he will continue to be in that conversation of guys or teams that could win a championship wherever he's playing. And even though he maybe hasn't looked the same since his injury, he's still very talented. I think he still has plenty left in the tank that I can't just assume he's never going to win a championship again. He's still one of the best players in the league. Don't let this postseason take you away from that. But in regards to the first point made, it's kind of what I said about Randy Moss. Like, Randy Moss is probably the second best wide receiver of all time. And when he went to New England, they didn't win. But when Moss wasn't on New England, they won 6 Super Bowls. Right, and so Randy Moss was such an incredible player. The Patriots, they didn't really need him. I know they had a great year. They went 18-0, set offensive records with Moss. But theoretically, when it came to winning Super Bowls, they were better without Randy. Now, Durant won a couple of championships with Golden State, so it's not the best comparison, but it's somewhat similar. Like, Durant was a great player, but you know what? You still kind of needed the Warriors more than they needed you. Moss never won anywhere else either. That was his best chance with the Patriots. He was an incredible receiver, but he still kind of needed Tom Brady more than Brady needed him. Brady was winning Super Bowls with, you know, David Patton and Troy Brown and these other guys. Wes Welker, he didn't need Randy Moss. As good as Moss was, he kind of needed the Patriots. As good as Kevin Durant is right now, you look back and you say, yeah, he kind of needed the Warriors more. And the last thing on all this, it's interesting. You have Kyrie and Durant, who decided to team up with one another in Brooklyn, and now they have to root against each other here in the finals. Because if the Celtics win, it makes Kyrie look worse. And if the Warriors win, it makes Durant look worse. So these two buddies who wanted to go play with one another in Brooklyn now are kind of pitted against one another in the finals. Because even though they're not playing these next couple of weeks, their legacy will be affected by the outcome of this NBA Finals as well. When we come back, analytics will only get you so far. I want to get to the Mark Kingston news. We'll do that later on this hour. But first, analytics will only get you so far in sports, and I'll explain why when we return. It's more Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, analytics will continue to only get you so far. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll get to the Mark Kingston news coming up in just a little bit as he is coming back as head coach of the Gamecocks baseball program. Interesting last couple of days in the college baseball world with the reveal of the bracket as we head to the college tournament. You know, I hate when we have, like, you call it the College World Series. To me, the World Series is just the very last series. I hate the Stanley Cup playoffs. No, it's just the Stanley Cup, the finals. Call it the Stanley Cup finals if you want. Then you have like the Stanley Cup second, whatever they call it. And the conference, and you get these conference finals and all these other different names. Make it all confusing for me. We get the NBA finals matchup with the Celtics and the Warriors. Now, Trent is the resident Heat fan around here. Trent, would you rather have had the Heat just lose in Game 6 and rip off the Band-Aid? Or were you pleased that they go to Game 7, they come back in Game 7, they get you all excited, it comes down to the final minute, just for Jimmy Butler to miss that three, and the Heat lose in seven games at home to have their season come to an end?
Yeah, my jaw is still on the floor from that shot with 11 seconds left. Obviously, I think Jimmy Butler was the guy to take the final shot, but you definitely could have set up a better play. I know he was in the moment and feeling it. No, Luke, I was glad it went to Game 7 because it was competitive. Both games, 5, 6, and 7, were absolutely amazing, and we were talking about the entire series just been blowouts.
Yeah.
Although, with the games that mattered most in this series, they were absolutely phenomenal games. So, no, I love the series. The Celtics are just very evidently a better team than the Heat. Better team, unfortunately.
If Butler was healthy throughout, are you getting ready for the Heat in the NBA Finals right now?
No doubt. No doubt. I do think so. Just the way he's been hurt the entire series, but he still was able to put up multiple 40-plus point games throughout the series. He played the entire game, Game 6 and 7. All 48 minutes he was in. They never subbed him out. He's an absolute dog, Luke, but it was tough. It was tough to see that at home in Miami. I mean, you bring up the point of would I rather have just lost in Boston? Now I'm kind of thinking probably because it was tough to see the Heat fans, you know, kind of filing out like they normally do with 2 minutes left, and then they came back. But good series overall. The Heat will get it back next year, Luke.
Yeah, Butler was terrible for those three middle games where he didn't seem to be right. 8 points, 6 points, 13 points. And then you come back 47 on the road in Game 6 against the best defensive team in the league, 35 in Game 7 with the season obviously on the line, and then you think back to Game 1, he had 41, Game 2, 29. To me, he was the most impressive player in the series. He just wasn't healthy for all seven games. The last thing I'll ask you about this series, and you already referenced it right off the top, that three-point play that was adjusted afterwards. Thoughts on that?
Thoughts, Luke, are really simple. I've never seen that happen before.
No.
Now, I've seen, like, an immediate timeout or something. They'll go and say, all right, it was actually a three instead of a two, or it was a two instead of a three. And that's what they were originally reviewing was it a two? But obviously, if you think he's out of bounds, it was definitely a three. Personally, I think you could have slipped at least, you know, 10 bucks, all ones, right under that shoe. So I personally don't think he was out, Luke, but I've never seen 3 minutes after the play to take points off the board. I think a full investigation needs to be launched into this, as well as in the NHL with Sidney Crosby hit.
It's been a tough postseason for Trent. All
sure
these conspiracy
has.
Theories. Now, maybe I missed something, but when I was watching the game, as you said, a couple minutes later, and the announcement we got, I think, was just while the game was going on,
yeah.
Mark Jones said, like, oh, by the way, they took the 3 points off the board. And I was like, oh, what? What happened? I didn't remember the play. They took 3 points off the board. I was at that point, I don't know, I must have been distracted. I didn't see them like remove it from the score bug or anything. I just heard him say that. I thought, what's going on here? Now, as you said, I don't remember that happening elsewhere. I don't need to give you my credentials, right? But I come from a big basketball family. My father played professionally, brother playing. We always watch basketball. I sent a text to my brothers the other night towards the end of the game. It was in the final minute when Jaylen Brown got called for an offensive foul on a layup because he, like, by accidentally, his elbow hit, I think it was Bam or P.J. Tucker, somebody in the face. I sent a text message off to my brothers at the time. I like to think I know a good deal about basketball. I am never more confused than watching an NBA game. Some of these rules make no sense to me. It's not basketball. And look, I'm not going to be like Bobby on Fan Talk just shredding the NBA and complaining how bad it is. I love the NBA. I watch all these games. And yet every night I sit there thinking like, wait, why is that a foul? Or why is this the call? Jaylen Brown, go back and watch that play. It happened with like 50 seconds left. It was a routine layup and his elbow just happened to accidentally hit somebody in the face and they call an offensive foul. What is this? The three-pointer. You should, if you want to review it, stop the game right there and go take a look. How can you come back 3 minutes later and say, I know you thought you were playing in a one-point game. You're actually playing now in a four-point game. It makes no sense. And then these challenges, too. I don't like the challenges in the NFL. It's not the coach's job to try to correct the officials. So we get that offensive foul on Jaylen Brown, then we get a challenge. Well, let's take a look if it's an offensive foul. And I hate all this stuff. I'm never more confused than when I'm watching an NBA game. And it's not that I don't understand. If I watch cricket, I have no idea what's going on in the sport. I should be confused. I grew up playing basketball. My whole family played basketball. My father coached, right? We watch it all the time. I don't know what's going on in these games. I don't know what an offensive foul is. I don't know what any of these rules are. It's not like you watch college basketball. College basketball is not quite as bad. It's still what you know about basketball, like what a charge is, what an offensive foul is, the defense. In the NBA, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. And then we get these flagrant ones, flagrant two. They're kicking people out of games. It's crazy to me. I can't keep up. And I don't know if I like the idea of, I'm all for making sure you get calls right in big games, but I would prefer, like, stop the game and go look at the replay monitor right there instead of reviewing it as the game's going on and then just throwing it into the broadcast like a random site. By the way, you know, like you're talking about, some, by the way, his father played in the NBA years ago, or just like a random little tidbit along the game. By the way, they took 3 points off the board. It was kind of odd to me. And some of those replays, yeah, it does not look conclusive. So here's what I'll say about analytics. Analytics will only get you so far, right? The idea is to win as many games as you can over the course of a long season. Baseball season, for example, analytics have become so big in baseball. Baseball is such a long year that the idea is like, okay, how can we capitalize? How can we, you know, we're not going to manage every game like it's game 7 of the World Series. How can we try to get the most wins out of this year? And the idea is, well, just, you know, swing for the fences, hit home runs. That's the easiest way to score runs and try to win as many games as you can over the long course of a season. But postseason play is different than the regular season, really in all sports. In baseball, it's all about the home runs. Then you get to the playoffs, and now you're facing the best pitchers in the league, and the weather is colder, so the ball doesn't travel as well, and they're running everybody out there, right? Because they are managing it now as Game 7. So they'll go to the bullpen in the fourth inning and throw five straight guys at you that are throwing upper 90s, and they'll bring their fourth starter from the rotation, and he'll come out of the bullpen and throw against you as well. It's harder to hit home runs in the playoffs. In football, football is all about throwing the football now. And then you get to the playoffs, and you have to go to Lambeau, and it's a frozen tundra, and now suddenly you have to run the football, play a little defense. How many teams can still do that? And in basketball, it's all about the three-pointer. In the regular season, or really just in general, right, it's always about shooting threes. And then we get to the playoffs, and teams will actually lock down defensively and guard and actually try, and they'll game plan. And it's not so easy to make three-pointers. I talk about this every year at baseball, and we'll get into some baseball stuff later on this afternoon since we just passed Memorial Day. It's a big day in the sport. But the Yankees are always a great example. They lead the league in homers almost every year. They have won World Series in the last 20 years. They always come up short in the playoffs because you can't rely solely on home runs. The majority of World Series champions the last 20 years are bottom 10 in strikeouts and outside of the top 5 in home runs. They still put the ball in play. World Series champs usually don't strike out a ton, or at least not as much as other teams. They put the ball in play. They don't rely so much on home runs, despite the way the game has shifted and what they want you to believe about, strikeouts don't matter, just hit home runs. That's not really how teams are winning World Series. The data backs it up. And in the NBA, it could be the same way with the three-pointer. I know the three-pointer has played such a huge role, right? But the Heat led the league in three-point shooting this year. In the playoffs, they shot 31%. That would be dead last in the league. And it would also be the lowest percentage for a team in the NBA in a decade. Right, it's harder to make threes in the playoffs. In fact, this has been the postseason of blowouts for the most part. And if you take all these blowouts in the NBA playoffs, I told you the number one reason why I think we've had so many blowouts are because of the three-pointers. And when you look at double-digit losers in the NBA playoffs, Combined, they shot 29% from three in those losses. That would be the lowest percentage for a team in 20 years, 29%. That's why we're getting so many blowout losses. Because when teams don't shoot it well from beyond the arc, they get blown out. And it's hard to shoot it so well from beyond the arc consistently in the playoffs. Meanwhile, you look at the NBA Finals, Golden State, we consider them, right? The Splash Bros, they're these three-point shooting team. They were eighth this year in threes. So, yeah, top 10, but they weren't number one. I mean, they were eighth. Boston was 14th. They're in the NBA Finals. And don't forget, Golden State just set a record for most points in the paint for a playoff series under Steve Kerr against Dallas last series. And in the playoffs, the Warriors are fourth out of the 16 playoff teams in three-point shooting. So, again, right, yeah, they're good. They're a good three-point shooting team, obviously, but they're not number one. They're not the most reliant. Celtics are eight out of 16 teams in the playoffs this year. Analytics are designed to maximize your chances over the course of a season, but once you get into a playoff series and you're facing the same team seven straight games, and they're actually playing defense now, and they're game planning against you, it's a little bit different. Right, what gives you the best chance to win as many games as possible over 6 months? Just swing for the fences. But in the playoffs, the game changes. Same with the NBA. In fact, since the Major League Baseball strike, which was way back in 1994, since 94, only two teams have led the league in home runs and gone on to win the World Series. The Yankees in 2009 and the Dodgers in that bubble year 2 years ago. That's it, since 94. And less than half of those teams, it's 27 years, less than half of the home run leaders failed to even make the playoffs in Major League Baseball. The team that hit the most home runs in the league, less than half have actually made the playoffs the last 27 years. No NBA champion this century. I stopped. I gave up. I gave up at 1999. No NBA champion has led the league in three-pointers since at least the 90s. And we know the game is different. They weren't shooting as many threes in the 90s as they are now, so at that point, it almost becomes irrelevant. The only year the Warriors have led the league in threes, they didn't win the championship. And when they won those three rings, the last three championships, if you go back and you look, they were actually number one in the league in mid-range scoring. Analytics will only get you so far. You can tell me it's all about threes and home runs, but we get to the playoffs. The Heat were the best three-point shooting team. They struggled to shoot it in the playoffs. I know they made it to the conference finals. They made it to Game 7. They almost won, but they're not in the NBA Finals. The Yankees lead the league in home runs every year. Then we get to the playoffs, and they disappoint their fans every year, getting knocked out too soon. Analytics will only get you so far. You still have to be able to put the ball in play, and you still have to be able to score from inside the arc in the NBA. Get some easy buckets every once in a while. When we come back, Mark Kingston, speaking of baseball, Mark Kingston's coming back as head coach of the Gamecocks. If you're a Gamecock fan, you may not like it, but it's easy to understand why it's happening, and I'll explain why when we come back. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Mark Kingston's coming back as the head coach of the Gamecocks. I'll explain why. It's the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. They announced the tournament field for the college baseball postseason. The only team in the state we got is Coastal Carolina. Right, Wofford fell apart over the weekend. They were left out. No Clemson. I personally thought rightfully so. College of Charleston, I thought, had a great year. Didn't play great in the conference tournament. Right, that was a tough break. The Citadel gave a little bit of a run last week to try to win the tournament. That was fun this past weekend in Greenville. Clemson missed the NCAA tournament just once from 1987 to 2019. And now they've missed the tournament in back-to-back years. So that's not good. These two programs are setting some bad history. Mark Kingston's coming back. It was announced over the weekend. Now, he hasn't done great. They're coming off their first losing season in 26 years. And much like I just said about Clemson, right, setting some history where over the last 50 years, they've had three seasons in which they failed to win 30 games. Two of those three have happened in the last 4 years under Mark Kingston. That is not good. But I gave my two reasons last week why I thought he could be back. And based off of reports, I assume this is the case as well. Number one's money. Number two's ego. Number one, money, right? You fired Muschamp and Frank Martin essentially in the past year, and you're still paying them not to coach. I saw Gene Sapikoff wrote an article about it, and he said that Kingston could thank the agents of Will Muschamp and Frank Martin for keeping him employed, right? Because it's hard to pay three coaches now to not work for you while also paying the coaches that you do have coaching for you. That could be asking a lot. You keep coming back, right? It's like asking to continue to loan money from a friend, borrow money from a buddy of yours without paying back the other loans. And you keep coming back. Like, I know I already owe you $200. Could you give me another $100 or whatever the money may be? Right? You're going to the boosters. Like, I know we already asked for $15 million to buy out Muschamp. Then we bought out Frank Martin. Can we pony up some more money and buy out Mark Kingston? I believe I saw that I think he still has 3 years left on his contract, I think I read, for Mark Kingston. So I know baseball coaches may not make as much as a football coach, but, you know, 3 years is still a good amount of time. So it's hard to fire all three coaches in essentially one academic year for the two reasons I just stated above, money and then also ego. Now, sticking to the money, right, again, you'd have to pay three buyouts for guys that aren't coaching anymore. And then the second part is the ego. How can an athletic director fire all three coaches in less than like 18 months? Because that's just an indictment on yourself. You got all three, right? You had to fire all three coaches within 18 months. That is a disaster for an athletic program or programs, for an athletic department. Now, at South Carolina, of course, women's basketball is highly successful. But for most schools, football is number one, basketball is number two, and then baseball is number three for most schools, the focus. South Carolina, you want to throw in women's basketball. We're talking about three of the top four sports. Okay, fine. Regardless, right, you can't fire three of the top four or your top three sports, however you want to slice it, right, in about an 18-month period. Doesn't look good. As I said, general managers in the NFL will give their guys more leeway, their top draft picks, most of them. And that's why the Cardinals, what the Cardinals did, the Arizona Cardinals, was so rare to fire a coach after 1 year and move on from their number one pick at the quarterback spot after 1 year. Because that Steve Keim really admit, like, I really botched this past year. I really missed on the draft pick and the head coaching hire. And after 1 year, moved on from both. And you went and you got Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury. That was also, a part of that was also the opportunity to upgrade. They were a little bit of a joint deal. So why not get those two guys while we have the chance? But most GMs wouldn't be so bold to make a move and admit that quickly after a year, like, yeah, I totally screwed up the two biggest decisions I had to make for this franchise. As an athletic director, I don't know if you want to admit, like, yep, we got it wrong in all three areas, because it would reflect poorly on you and your job performance as well. Now, ironically, if there's one program the Gamecocks, especially with their AD, should be successful at, you would think it'd be baseball. But it's a bad reflection on the athletic director, even if, like a Frank Martin predates the AD's hire, still to move on from all three coaches at once doesn't look great. Schools don't often do it. There's only so much money to go around. And, you know, it'd be like in your own life, right? If you were renovating a home, and usually maybe you do one part a year, or maybe like every 6 months, right? We'll do the bathroom now, and then maybe next year we'll have enough money saved up. We'll do the kitchen, and then we'll do the master bedroom the following year, or maybe you space it out every 6 months, whatever. You got to budget these things. Same idea. And Ray Tanner is obviously a baseball guy, so maybe the hope is you can still correct the baseball aspect. It'd be like a mechanic. If you were a mechanic and you're running into some hard times and you got to replace the roof on your home and maybe you need some dental work and you got some issues with your car as well, you could use a new car. But you can't afford to do all three things right now. So if you're a mechanic, you figure, well, let's fix the roof. Let me get this dental work done. But I'm a mechanic. I can get by with the car troubles. I'll figure it out. I work on cars. I know cars. Sure, I could use a new car, but in the meantime, right, I'll just try to fix this stuff on my own, or I'll try to get by until I have the money to upgrade. But the mechanic may not know anything about roofing or dental work, so you better get a pro in there to handle that stuff. But the car, you can handle. You could save some bucks when you have to by, you know, driving around a clunker that you continually fix when needed. And I guess maybe that's a similar idea here. Like, we got to upgrade at football, basketball. When you look at the athletic director and saying, we got to do better in the baseball program, well, we kind of have to save some money. We can't buy out all three of these guys. Well, hopefully we could turn around baseball when you have Ray Tanner as the athletic director and now Kingston will be coming back. I don't think his performance warrants another year, the job that Mark Kingston has done, or certainly did this past year. But it's hard, for a couple of reasons, to fire all three coaches essentially in one academic year. And it's hard for an AD to do that and then continue to come back and run said programs. It's like, well, why do we try? Right, this guy, we just had to fire all three coaches. Why are things going to be better now? So last week, I hypothesized that I could see Kingston coming back for those two reasons. It was announced over the weekend he is coming back, and I think because of those two reasons. Because of the money and the buyouts of the other coaches, and because you also just a bad luck to fire all three coaches in about 12 months. Maybe isn't a great reason, but probably the reason used here. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 1 of the Morrow Midday Show at Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We got to talk about maybe your cookouts and hot dogs coming up in just a little bit. A whole lot more to get to throughout the afternoon. But I saw David Tepper made an interesting move this morning. He fired the head coach of the soccer team he owns, Charlotte FC, first year of an expansion team. And there were 14 games in, 5-8-1, and it was, you know, I'll be honest with you, I don't follow the professional soccer ranks or really soccer at all. But reading those who do cover it, they said that they were actually performing better than maybe expected. So it was really seen as a surprise. And this is kind of the reputation that David Tepper has built up in that he's, you know, this fast-dealing businessman who's very aggressive. Maybe has a short fuse. And yet, you look at the Panthers, and Matt Rhule's been given a bit of a longer leash, and the first-year coach for his soccer team gets fired after 14 games. So I'm curious. We hear about Matt Rhule's 7-year contract. Rhule saying this offseason, right? David Tepper told me I got 5 years to get this right. Well, when it comes to other areas, David Tepper seems to have a little bit of a quicker finger to make the decisions. Firing a soccer coach after 14 in year one of an expansion team. It's not like you're taking over for the Lakers or somebody. And yet Rhule's still there 3 years in without any sort of improvements. We'll see how short that leash really is. I'm Matt Rhule. We'll find out how impatient David Tepper truly is. Hour 2 coming up next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.